Good evening, if you're anything like me, and for your own sake, we should hope not, you are thinking of spring. You've got spring on the mind right now because it is lovely. And so when you start to lighten your step for springtime, of course, nothing quite makes the day complete like a good story about blood, brawls, abject poverty, and despair. So, good evening. It's Wednesday. Happy spring. March the 29th, 2006. And it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. He Swung and He Missed by Nelson Algren. It was Miss Donahue of Public School 24 who finally urged Rocco, in his 15th year, out of 8th grade and into the world. She had watched him fighting, at recess times, from his 6th year on. The kindergarten had had no recesses, or it would have been from his 5th year. She had nurtured him personally through 4 trying semesters, and so it was with something like enthusiasm that she wrote in his autograph book the afternoon of graduation day, trusting that Rocco will make good. Ultimately, Rocco did, in his own way. He stepped from the schoolroom into the ring, back of the happy hour bar, in a catchweight bout with an $8 purse, winner-take-all. Rocco took it. Uncle Mike Adler, local promoter, called the boy Young Rocco after that one, and the name stuck. He fought through the middleweights and into the light heavies, while his purses increased to as much as $60 and expenses. In his 19th year, he stopped growing. His purses stopped growing, and he married a girl called Lily. He didn't win everyone after that, somehow, and by the time he was 22, he was losing as often as he won. He fought on. It was all he could do. He never took a dive, he never had a set-up or a soft touch. He stayed away from whiskey, he never gambled, he went to bed early, before every bout, and he loved his wife. He fought in 100 corners of the city, under 6 managers, and he fought every man he was asked to, at any hour. He substituted for better men on as little as 2 hours' notice. He never ran out on a fight, and he was never put down for a 10-count. He took beatings from the best in the business, but he never stayed down for 10. He fought a comer from the coast one night and took the worst beating of his career. But he was on his feet at the end, with a jaw broken in 3 places. After that one, he was hospitalized for 3 months, and Lily went to work in a factory. She wasn't a strong girl, and he didn't like it that she had to work. He fought again before his jaw was ready, and lost. Yet, even when he lost, the crowds liked him. They heckled him when he was introduced as Young Rocco, because he looked like 34 before he was 26. Most of his hair had gone during his layoff, and scar tissue over his eyes made him look less and less like a young anything. Friends came, friends left. Money came in, was lost, was saved. He got the break on an occasional decision, and was occasionally robbed out of a duke he'd earned. All things changed, but his weight, which was 174, and his wife, who was Lily, and his record of never having been put down for 10, that stood, like his name, which was forever Young Rocco. That stuck to him like nothing else in the world but Lily. At the end, which came when he was 29, all he had left was his record and his girl. Being 29, one of that pair had to go. He went 6 weeks without earning a dime before he came to that realization. When he found her wearing a pair of his old tennis shoes about the house to save the heels of her only decent pair of shoes, he made up his mind. Maybe young Rocco wasn't the smartest pug in town, but he wasn't the punchiest either. Just because there was a dent in his face and a bigger one in his wallet, it didn't follow that his brain was dented. It wasn't. He knew what the score was, and he loved his girl. He came into Uncle Mike's office looking for a fight, and Mike was good enough not to ask what kind he wanted. He had a 20-year-old named Sully Klasky that was bringing along under the billing of Kid Klass. There was money back of the boy. No chances were to be taken. If Rocco was ready to dive, he had the fight. Uncle Mike put no pressure on Rocco. There were two light heavies out in the gym ready to jump at the chance to dive for Sully Klasky. All Rocco had to say was okay. His word was good enough for Uncle Mike. Rocco said it, and left the gym with the biggest purse of his career, at the first he's gotten in advance, in his pocket. 4 20s and 2 10s. He gave Lily every dime of that money, and when he handed it over, he knew he was only doing the right thing for her. He had earned the right to sell out, and he had sold. The ring owed him more than a C-note, he reflected soundly, and added loudly for Lily's benefit. I'll stop the bomb dead in his tracks. They were both happy that night. Rocco had never been happier since graduation day. He had a headache all the way to the city garden that night, but it lessened a little in the shadowed dressing room under the stands. The moment he saw the lights of the ring, as he came down the littered aisle alone, the ache sharpened once more. Slouched unhappily in his corner for the wind-up, he watched the lights overhead swaying a little, and closed his eyes. When he opened them, a slow dust was rising toward the lights. He saw it sweep suddenly, swift and sidewise, high over the ropes and out across the dark and watchful rows. Below him, someone pushed the warning buzzer. He looked through Kid Klass as they touched gloves, and glared sullenly over the boy's head while Ryan, the ref, hurried through the stuff about a clean break and the clinches. He felt the robe being taken from his shoulders, and suddenly, in that one brief moment before the bell, felt more tired than he ever had in a ring before. He went down in a half-crouch, and someone called out, "Cut him down, Sully!" He backed to make the boy lead, and then came in long enough to flick his left twice into the teeth and skitter away. The bleachers whooped, sensing blood. He'd give them their money's worth for a couple of rounds anyhow. No use making it look too bad. In the middle of the second round, he began sensing that the boy was telegraphing his right by pulling his left shoulder, and stepped in to trap it. The boy's left came back bloody, and Rocco knew he'd been hit by the way the bleachers began again. It didn't occur to him that it was time to dive. He didn't even remember. Instead, he saw the boy telegraphing the right once more, and the left protecting the heart, slipping loosely down toward the navel, the tell-tale left shoulder hunching. Only it wasn't down. It wasn't right. It wasn't to the heart. The boy's left snapped like a hurled rock between his eyes, and he groped blindly for the other's arms, digging his chin sharply into the shoulder, hurting the six-bit bunch out there for thinking he could be hurt so soon. He shoved the boy off, flashed his left twice into the teeth, burned him skillfully against the middle rope, and heeled him sharply as they broke. Then he skittered easily away. And the bell. Down front, Mike Adler's eyes followed Rocco back to his corner. Rocco came out for the third, fighting straight up, watching Solly's gloves coming languidly out of the other corner, dangling loosely a moment in the glare, and a flat iron smashed in under his heart so that he remembered, with sagging surprise, that he'd already been paid off. He caught his breath, while following the indifferent gloves, thinking vaguely of Lily and oversized tennis shoes. The gloves drifted backward and dangled loosely with little to do but catch light idly 4 feet away. The right broke again beneath his heart and he grunted in spite of himself. The boy's close-cropped head followed in, cockily, no higher than Rocco's chin but coming neckless straight down to the shoulders. And the gloves were gone again. The boy was faster than he looked, and the pain in his head settled down to a steady beating between the eyes. The great strength of a fighting man is his pride. That was young Rocco's strength in the rounds that followed. The boy called Kid Klaas couldn't keep him down. He was down in the fourth, twice in the fifth, and again in the seventh. In that round, he stood with his back against the ropes, standing the boy off with his left in the seconds before the bell. He had the trick of looking impassive when he was hurt, and his face at the bell looked as impassive as a catcher's mitt. Between that round and the eighth, Uncle Mike climbed into the ring beside young Rocco. He said nothing, just stood there, looking down. He thought Rocco might have forgotten. He'd had 4 chances to stay down, and he hadn't taken one. Rocco looked up. "I'm clear as a bell," he told Uncle Mike. He hadn't forgotten a thing. Uncle Mike climbed back into his seat, resigned to anything that might happen. He understood better than young Rocco. Rocco couldn't stay down until his knees would fail to bring him up. Uncle Mike sighed. He decided he liked young Rocco. Somehow he didn't feel as sorry for him as he had in the gym. "I hope he makes it," he found himself hoping. The crowd felt differently. They had seen the lean and scarred Italian drop his man here 20 times before, the way he was trying to keep him from being dropped himself now. They felt it was his turn. They were standing up in the rows to see it. The dust came briefly between. A tired moth struggled lamely upward towards the lights. And the bell. Ryan came over between rounds, hooked Rocco's head back with the crooked forefinger on the chin after Rocco's negro handler had stopped the bleeding with collodion and muttered something about the thing going too far. Rocco spat. "All right, Sully, drop it on him," someone called across the ropes. It sounded somehow like money to Rocco. It sounded like somebody was being short-changed up there. But Sully stayed away, hands low, until the eighth was half gone. Then he was wide with the right, held and butted as they broke. Rocco felt the blood and got rid of some of it on the boy's left breast. He trapped the boy's left, wrapping the kidneys fast before grabbing the arms again, and pressed his nose firmly into the hollow of the other's throat to arrest its bleeding. felt the blood trickling into the hollow there as into a tiny cup. Roku put his feet together and a glove on both of Kid Klaus's shoulders to shove him sullenly away, and must have looked strong doing it, for he heard the crowd murmur a little. He was in Sully's corner at the bell, and moved back to his own corner with his head held high to control the bleeding. When his handler stopped it again, he knew at last that his own pride was double-crossing him. And he felt glad for that much. Let them worry out there in the rows. He'd been short-changed since graduation day. Let them be on the short end tonight. He had the 100th. He'd get a job in a garage and forget every one of them. It wasn't until the 10th and final round that Rocco realized he wanted to K.O. the boy, that means knock out, because it wasn't until then that he realized he could. Why not do the thing up the right way? He felt his tiredness fall from him like an old cloak at the notion. This was his fight, his round. He'd end like he'd started, as a fighting man. And saw Sully Kid Klaus shuffling his shoulders forward uneasily. The boy would be a full size heavy in another 6 months. He bullied him into the ropes and felt the boy fade sideways. Roku caught him off balance with his left, hook fashion, into the short ribs. The boy chopped back with his left uncertainly, as though he might have jammed the knuckles, and held. In a half-rolling clinch along the ropes, he saw Sully's mouthpiece projecting, slipping halfway in and halfway out, and then swallowed in again with a single tortured twist of the lips. He got an arm loose and banged the boy back of the ear with an overhand right that must have looked funny, because the crowd laughed a little. Sully smeared his glove across his nose, came halfway in, and changed his mind. Left himself wide and was almost steady, until Rocco feinted him into a knot and brought the right looping from the floor with even his toes behind it. Sully stepped in to let it breeze past, and hooked his right hard to the button, then the left. Rocco's mouthpiece went spinning into an arc into the lights, then the right. Rocco spun halfway around and stood looking sheepishly out at the rose. Kid Klaus saw only his man's back. Rocco was out on his feet. He walked slowly along the ropes, tapping them idly with his glove and smiling vacantly down at the newspaper men, who smiled back. Sully looked at Ryan. Ryan nodded toward Rocco. Kid Klaus came up fast behind his man and threw the left under the armpit, flush onto the point of the chin. Rocco went forward on the ropes and hung there, his chin catching the second strand, and hung on and on like a man decapitated. He came to in the locker room under the stands, watching the steam swimming about the pipes directly overhead. Uncle Mike was somewhere near, telling him he had done fine, and then he was alone. They were all gone then. All the 6-bit hecklers and the iron-throated boys in the 60-cent seats. He rose heavily and dressed slowly, feeling a long relief that he'd come to the end. He'd done it the hard way, but he had done it. Let them all go. He was fixing his tie, taking more time with it than it required when she knocked. He called to her to come in. She had never seen him fight, but he knew she must have listened on the radio, or she wouldn't be down now. She tested the adhesive over his right eye timidly, fearing to hurt him with her touch, but wanting to be sure it wasn't loose. "I'm okay," he assured her easily. "We'll celebrate a little and forget the whole business." It wasn't until he kissed her that her eyes avoided him. It wasn't till then that he saw she was trying not to cry. He patted her shoulder. "There's nothing wrong, Lil. A couple days' rest and I'll be in the pink again." Then saw it wasn't that after all. "You told me you'd wean," the girl told him. "I got 8-1 and put the whole damn bankroll on you. I wanted to surprise you, and now we ain't got a crying dime." Rocco didn't blow up. He just felt a little sick, sicker than he had ever felt in his life. He walked away from the girl and sat on the rubbing table, studying the floor. She had sense enough not to bother him, and he'd realized what the score was. Then he looked up, studying her from foot to head. His eyes didn't rest on her face. They went back to her feet, to her scarred toes of the only decent shoes, and a shadow passed over his heart. "You got good odds, honey," he told her thoughtfully. "You done just right. We made him sweat all night for their money." Then he looked up and grinned. A wide, white grin. That was all she needed to know. It was okay after all. She went to him so he could tell her how okay it really was. That was like young Rocco from graduation day. He always did it the hard way, but he did it. Miss Donahue would have been proud.